live on the air on Rumble. What do you think?
Well, it's usually so professionally produced in like a studio with executives from movie houses. So this is going to be so much different, but we'll see what we can do.
We'll see. How you doing, Sunny?
I'm good. I'm looking at how bad my reflection is in my glasses. So I think I'm going to have to say no to the glasses tonight.
No, they look fine. I think they look fine. Yeah, there's a lot to get to. We've been through the South Carolina primary now. Super Tuesday's coming up.
Yeah.
Mitch McConnell has announced that he's stepping down as Republican leader in the Senate. There's both presidential candidates, Trump and Biden, at the border on the same day. Hunter Biden testified. My God, there's a lot of stuff to talk about. And it's a good thing, because this is the Line Drive Podcast. Look at that. It works just like it always did. That, you're talking about high production value. That's what that is.
Sure. Right there. Yeah. I know. You can tell.
Hogan, you were on the road for a bit, right? Leading up to the South Carolina primary, which was just this past Saturday. Tell me, what was that all about? What's your takeaway from the trouncing that the former president gave Nikki Haley in her home state?
Yeah, I was around for about 6 days. I traveled mostly in the coastal areas. Twist my arm, go to Charleston and to Hilton Head, Bluffton, Beaufort. I also did the upstate too for one of the days. I'll tell you what I was really struck by, how angry they were at her. Like the vitriol. I thought they'd be like, look, we like her. She was a good governor, but you know, it's not her time, or this is about Trump or something. They were like, we don't like that she's using Democrat billionaires to fund her campaign. We don't like that she said she wasn't going to run if Trump ran, and now she's doing it. We don't like the fact that she's trying to return this America First movement, this America First GOP, back to this late 90s, early 2000s globalist, corporatist, elitist party. It was a whole bunch of different reasons. They thought it was a vanity project, and everything she was doing is just giving fodder to the Democrats. They thought that the Trump campaign was spending too much money dealing with Nikki when they should be focused on Joe Biden and other things, because Nikki was forcing them to have to spend ads. Look, Nikki outspent him $25 million in South Carolina, and he spent one. So they outspent him 25-1. Now, I wasn't working for the campaign. I don't work for the campaign. I was really there on my own dime and my own time, because I thought it was important to kind of get back to my home state and talk to folks. And they were furious. They were just angry at her. I was really kind of shocked by it. But you kind of saw that in the results, too.
Yeah, you did. And so it went down about 60-40. And it was an open primary, as you know, because in South Carolina, you don't register by party. A lot of Democrats had voted already previously in the Democrat primary, which had come earlier. But what's your sense of how many Democrats were in the mix of the 40%? I mean, I know you can't put a number on it, but what do you think?
Well, I always think in South Carolina, because it is a true open primary, it's a little bit misleading. Like, it's a little more overhyped. It's always something that we talk about election time. But like Jim Clyburn put out an email, the Democrat Party in South Carolina put out an email that was basically like, if you vote in the Republican primary and cross over, you will not be able to hold office in the Democrat Party in the state of South Carolina. You can't be a committeeman. You can't be a delegate. You can't be anything to the convention. Now there aren't really like 150 Democrats in the whole state, but still, the point is,
a few more
they were
that.
Pretty adamant about them not voting for Nikki. So I don't really know that it made that much of a difference.
Sonny, you were there as well, right, for a period of time? Didn't you say?
Yeah.
Somebody came up to you and said they listened to the podcast.
I did, yes. I had a listener come up and say that they listened to the Line Drive podcast, so that was nice. I had texted Tim. I was like, oh my gosh, look at our fans coming out in full force here tonight. Yeah, I also got to see Hogan. I saw him there.
Yes,
it's true. I think I was at the end of the night. It was a long night because I drove down about 3.5 hours, was there for the victory party, and then drove back. And let me tell you, I was struggling on the way back. I know it's not politics related, but I was on the mom struggle bus on the way back.
Sure.
But it was great. I had a great night there. Obviously, him coming out, you know, like whatever it was, 7:01, as soon as they called it. the president coming out, giving his big speech. It was awesome. I mean, the crowd was fired up. I was in the press pen, and everyone, even in the press pen, it was like, wow, I can't believe this happened so quickly. I'm like, yeah, not playing around. We're ready for it. We knew this was going to happen, and I thought it was just a total boss move.
Yeah, yeah. So we should point out you are working on the Trump campaign now. I think, you know, and he went out there.
I have to interject. Everything I'm doing here is completely in my personal capacity.
Right. Okay. That's good.
Very true.
So noted. But, you know, I think you probably could tell that something they had sped things up at least a little bit, because sometimes Trump goes out there and, you know, kind of blurts out the exact things that they were just talking about backstage, where he said something about, boy, that was faster than we thought it was going to be, and we're out here a little sooner than we thought, because they called it for him like at mere seconds, really, truly mere seconds.
Yeah.
Polls closed. And I think they wanted him to get out there and put his mark on the results before Nikki Haley had a chance to go out and give another victory speech. Right. They wanted him to go first.
Let's just say this. I was backstage with him, so we were having these conversations.
Oh, okay. So there you go.
All I will say is I had back-to-back-to-back-to-back hits starting at 7 o'clock. As soon as the polls closed, I was supposed to go on. Then I had another one like at 7:05, you know, 7:10, like just boom, boom, kind of along the stage at the back, Sonny, you know, where they set up, for those who don't know, they set up kind of a press riser at the back of the room, and they have cameras stationed all along there, and you just kind of go from one to one to one.
Is it like set up like any Trump rally would be set up?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
And so I was sitting there thinking, wait a minute. If he's going to go out like at 7, what am I? So basically everybody started pinging my phone like at 6:55, like, where are you? You've got to be on. I was like, sorry, I can't make it. And they, you know, blowing up my phone, like, what are you doing? You said we would be. This is unprofessional. I was like, hold on. I think you'll be happy with who I'm going to put out instead of me. Don't worry about it. And then I started getting texts from reporters saying, oh my gosh, it looks like they're going to call the race from our decision desk as soon as the polls close. Yeah. So they realized what was happening, then it was fine. So yeah, he wanted to get out there. He got out there and, you know, gave a good little speech.
Super Tuesday coming up March 5th, this coming week, which would be Super Tuesday falls on what day of the week? Tuesday, right? Oh,
yes.
It's Wednesday. It's a misnomer. It's Wednesday.
Super Tuesday. It's Wednesday, right? Well, I don't want to get accused of spreading election misinformation. Yeah. No.
Our Super first Tuesday. Live rumble.
I'm sorry. Super Tuesday. Joke. Right. Super Tuesday is, in fact, on Tuesday. I want to make sure that that's clear so that, no accusations of misinformation.
You know what?
What
I'm going to do for the first time in my life is vote early this week. I meant to do it today, but today got really hectic. So I think tomorrow me and my little baby are going to go vote early.
Yes. That's his first election, right? First time he's going to the polls on election day.
Yes, it is. I'm going to have to take some pictures and document it.
So North Carolina, which is where you are, is part of Super Tuesday. So is Virginia, where I am. But here's the rest of them. Alabama, Alaska, that's for the Republicans only. Arkansas, California, Colorado, Maine, Massachusetts, Minnesota, North Carolina, Oklahoma, Tennessee, Texas, Utah, Vermont, and Virginia. And also American Samoa, the territory of American Samoa. Is there anywhere in there, Hogan, what is Nikki Haley's best chance to get within 20 points? Anywhere?
Unless Neptune is one of the
no
states. Okay. Then no. I don't know where it is. I mean, DC's on Saturday. And I'm actually doing something here for that. I'm gonna go over to see that whole fiasco. But
speaking of, how many are there more Republicans in DC or Democrats in South Carolina?
So yeah, it's a close line. I don't see it. She's got it. She has to see it too. I mean, she knows at this point. So if the question then becomes, if she knows, what is she doing? That's the real question.
Is she going to stay in after Super Tuesday? Next question.
I don't think so. But I did. I thought she wouldn't. I thought she'd get out before South Carolina.
I was just about to say that. I feel like you always have such good insights or ideas when it comes to things like this. Because to me, when she comes out and gives these victory speeches, I'm like, is she just like delusional and thinking that, oh, I'm going to keep going. Like Super Tuesday is going to be my day. I'm really going to pick up some momentum after Super Tuesday. Are her advisors going to keep telling her, oh, stay in this. You got it. You got it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At this point, I don't
know. Where's the path? You know, there's
there's no path. There's no math. It's a big problem.
There never has been. Well, she put out a tweet the night of the South Carolina primary. And this one, you know, the first part of it, this is like it's a two-paragraph tweet, basically. And the first part is unobjectionable. This is fine. It says, I'm a woman of my word. I'm not giving up this fight when a majority of Americans disapprove of both Trump and Biden. All right. Fair enough.
But you're not. You said you wouldn't run.
Right. All right. Ran. Yeah, she did. She did. So okay. She is going back on that. So, but fair enough. Trump and Biden, okay. They're fave on faves. All right, sure. They're not the most popular of candidates, you know, nationwide, if you look at their fave on faves and all that. Fair enough. But then the second part, this is where she loses me. In the next 10 days, and again, this is the night of the South Carolina primary. In the next 10 days, 21 states and territories will speak. They have the right to a real choice. Not a Soviet-style election with only one candidate, and I have a duty to give them that choice. Okay, couple of things. First of all,
Tim, you're just back a to couple. This.
Good. What's that?
Your tweet back when you quote tweeted this. You had a great quote tweet on this.
Thank you very much. That's what I'm going to get to.
There you go.
The first thing, just because one candidate in the race is getting crushed and one candidate is far, far ahead, that doesn't make it a Soviet-style one-candidate election. It just means you're losing. That's what
right.
That and two, she didn't accidentally say, oh, this is a Soviet-style thing. She injected that on purpose. By invoking the Soviets, she injects the whole dishonest Russian collusion thing, yeah. The Russian influence attack. So in that way, she sounds more like Adam Schiff than she does any Republican anywhere in this country. And that is what annoyed me. You know, honest to God, you're trying to score your political points by invoking the Russia hoax. Who are you? What party are you running in?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That it's really a problem. Tim, she also keeps saying, yeah, I can beat Biden. We're going to lose with Trump, right? Your team is the Steelers.
I'm a Pittsburgh guy. I'm an Eagles fan. I'm Philly.
Okay, Eagles. Okay, Eagles, even better because I like the Eagles. Here's the thing. It'd be like if the Eagles said, hey, we could have beaten Kansas City. I know we can beat them. Okay, maybe, but you got to win games to get to the Super Bowl. Don't win any games to get to the Super Bowl, you're never going to face Kansas City. She's not winning any states. So it's very difficult to say, hey, if you just, speaking of Soviet style, if you just make me the nominee, I promise I'll win. I'm not going to do winning to get there. Right. I mean, the whole thing is goofy on its face. I think while we're talking about it on this podcast in our first live iteration and version of this, I don't want to talk about it too much longer. Whatever. She's not going to be the nominee. And but the thought that, hey, she just wants to hang around to get delegates, because if something were to happen to Trump with the legal system, then she'd be the nominee. That's not how it works either. Then the convention, then the RNC would have something to say about who the delegates would go to. We'd have to kind of rejigger things. They don't just all of a sudden all go to Nikki, do they?
No.
No. So then the whole thing goes up in smoke. And we have to figure it out. But anyway, just whatever.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, I'm with Hogan on, like, I'm kind of over this, like, over talking about her. She's not going to win. And even like moving forward, I don't know, 2028 and, you know, future elections too. I just have such a bad taste in my mouth about Nikki Haley right now that I don't think she's ever going to be the candidate for me.
Yeah. You know, you wonder how much damage, but see, look, I think she was on CNN or somewhere where somebody asked her, you know, could it be that, have you considered the idea that the Republican Party has kind of moved away from where you are politically? And she said, you know, it might be. And I'm thinking, have you people not been paying attention? Yeah, maybe. There's no might about it. I mean, my gosh, this is not the same party as when she got elected governor of South Carolina.
Not even close.
I want to say something about your Eagles analogy. It's actually, if you keep following it, the thing is, the Eagles this past season, they started out the year 10-1. and they were really regarded as one of the two or three best teams in the league, although there were some questions about them. So Nicky never had that high watermark that the Eagles had.
That's also true.
However, the Eagles finished the season losing 6 out of 7 and got bounced out of the playoffs at the first opportunity to get bounced out. And so that is kind of like Nicky. The Eagles did a little bit better because they did manage to win one game in the home stretch there, and Nicky hasn't won any, and she's not going to. So, but the
she's not gone,
and this, but the stumbling finish at the end is kind of, you know, I can see that as a parallel.
What happened to your team?
You know, no one really knows. They lost five out of the last. They started, they were 10-1, and then they got beat badly by San Francisco, and that just put them into a tailspin. That they beat Kansas City, who is now the Super Bowl champions. They beat the Buffalo Bills, who were considered a high-flying team in the AFC. They beat the Dallas Cowboys. They beat They beat Miami. They beat a bunch of playoff teams, and then all of a sudden they couldn't beat anybody. I have no idea what happened, and no one has actually figured out what happened. They gave up. That's what it looks like.
They started getting beat up front on both sides of the ball. That was their problem.
And I think it just seemed like they quit. That's what it seemed like. Yeah. Speaking of, this isn't exactly quitting, but announcing that he will no longer be the Republican leader in the Senate, Mitch McConnell. I think Mitch is a guy that a lot of the Republican base loves to just beat up and complain about. And certainly there's been a lot. He's given them a lot of reasons to do that over the course of decades. But I got to tell you, as you look at the Supreme Court, and Sonny, I know you care a lot about the decisions that come out of the Supreme Court. Every time those conservative justices hand down a decision that the base of our party likes, I think, you know, President Trump gets credit for nominating those people, but Mitch McConnell was the Senate leader who saw him through. And don't you have to hand him that?
Yeah, that's good. I don't have that. That's a great point. And yes, we love all of the Supreme Court justices that the president was able to get onto the bench, specifically for me with the overturn of Roe v. Wade. Was awesome. I don't have much to say about Mitch McConnell other than I'm a big proponent of term limits. And I feel like both parties should consider term limits. And that's all. I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, I'm going to say you can take the good with the bad here. I think Mitch McConnell's legacy with judges, not just Supreme Court, but other judges too, were a really big success for the Trump administration, getting some people on the bench that actually don't legislate from the bench, that they actually do their job from a constitutional standpoint. It's very important for the future of this country. And we're going to see some of that kind of in these election probably cases coming forward, both proactive and reactive in a lot of these states. Obviously, the Supreme Court was big. McConnell did a lot to raise money, and his PAC gave a lot of money to people running for Senate who are now sitting in the Senate, like Josh Hawley and others. I don't like those people kind of dancing on his grave a little bit here, because you may not be there without the money he gave you and some of the support. But at the same time, there was a story like last week that came out where Mitch McConnell told the Speaker, Speaker Johnson, hey, you know, we need to be worried about Ukraine, not the southern border. And that's just, that could not be more tone deaf. That could not be more devoid of reality. So again, I get that so many on our side are like, yes, I don't disagree. Maybe it's time for some new leadership, no question, more America first type agenda from our leaders in the Senate. But at the same time, I mean, he's done some good stuff for conservatism as well with those judicial nominees, the Supreme Court, and a few other things. So,
he's been there for a while.
I will get killed. I'll probably get killed for nuancing that, but you know what I'm saying. I mean,
yeah, I know. I don't think there's very few things in politics where everything is either all good or all bad. You know, and I think as it relates to the perspective from the Republican base, certainly. Members of the base have to acknowledge that they like the makeup of the Supreme Court now. And Mitch McConnell played a giant role in that. And, you know, there's a lot of stuff.
He also stopped the nominee from happening or going up for a vote under Obama.
Oh, sure. He is absolutely
a big one.
Personally responsible for allowing the next president. And it turned out to be Trump, of course.
For Merrick Garland. And think about how great that is, too. Mm-hmm. that Merrick Garland, with all of his ridiculous decisions now and his moves now, could you imagine him on the Supreme Court? So there's another good one.
Yeah, so he is single-handedly responsible for keeping that seat available for Trump to nominate his own, so instead of Merrick Garland.
Yeah.
So I mean, there is that, but I get, you know, there was a lot of deal making that our side didn't like, and
that's fair.
It is fair,
and it
always seemed like, you know, all of official Washington, all of establishment Washington, the Senate, and of course the Biden White House and the media, they're always ganging up on House Republicans. No matter what happens, from their perspective, it's always the House Republicans' fault. And for me, it seems like and it's the way that it's designed, so this is no surprise, but the House Republicans are so much closer and so much more in touch with what the base of the party thinks than the Senate or official
Washington.
That's the way, this is no, you know, it's not by accident, because that's the way that the House is designed, and that's why it reflects the more populist nature of the electorate.
Sure,
but,
sure.
You know, I mean, I get it. There's always going to be friction between things like the House and the Senate. So
always.
Yeah. Speaking of friction, the border is, I think there's a rule, a truism in politics, that you want to play on your home turf. And the fact that Joe Biden had to go down to the border again, I think, what is this, the second time? You know, if one of the central issues of the election is illegal immigration, then boy, do I like Republicans' chances, because that's fighting on our turf, that issue, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it will be.
Sonny, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I think we see across every state, even Democrats and Republicans, that the border and immigration is the number one issue that people are concerned about, probably neck and neck with obviously the economy, because I can't afford my groceries right now. That's a pretty big one. And I'm sure we're going to get to this, but Lake and Riley, the girl that was killed in Georgia, just absolutely, now that I'm a parent, I cannot imagine. My child's a baby, but I worry about everything, and I cannot fathom the pain that her family is going through right now. And all the blame is at the feet of Democratic policies, letting these illegal immigrants, just violent criminals, come into our country. They're committing crimes, they're getting let off. They're committing worse crimes, getting let off. And now this has happened. Did y'all see the press conference with the mayor? I think it was the mayor of Athens.
Athens.
Yeah.
Horrible.
Unbelievable.
Horrible.
I mean, he deserved everything. And I was thinking as I was driving today, just how bad our border situation is. And I don't understand why Democrats choose to protect illegal immigrants who are coming into our country to commit the most heinous crimes, killing our citizens. They choose to protect them instead of us. What about that as American? That's just taking steps towards us becoming not a sovereign country anymore. And it's extremely scary now to be a parent and have kids growing up in this America.
Yeah. Look, there's so many ways to go with this, because I get so fired up talking about it, because I did a lot of work on this in the White House with the wall and other things. This is not by accident. This is by design. What they want, what the left wants, is to flood this country with people who are here illegally so that they can get them on the government dime. And then eventually those voters will come to realize it was the Democrats who did it. So thank you, Democrats. We're going to vote for you in perpetuity. It's about gaining and maintaining political power. That's it.
Of course.
As far as that sweet girl, that whole situation in Athens, every time an illegal alien commits a rape, a murder, a burglary, an assault, a DUI, a carjacking, drug deals, killing our American citizens, whatever it is, every single one of those crimes is 100% preventable. Everyone. Yeah. Because they should not be here in the first place. And I was actually listening to a buddy of mine, who Tom Homan, used to work and do a lot of work in the administration down the border. And he was pointing out that Lake and Riley situation, there were at least three problems with that situation. Under Trump, that guy would have still been waiting in Mexico because of the Remain in Mexico policy. We ended catch and release under Trump. So had we captured him, he would have been detained. ICE would have had him in a detention facility. And number three, we allowed ICE to issue detainers for jail if the person was picked up for a crime, whereas now they have to be convicted of a crime. So that's three misses, three chances this administration had to stop that crime, and they didn't. This border is wide open. It is putting a stress and strain on our medical facilities, on our schools, on our first responders, on all of our communities. And it's like the Democrats don't care at all. And I'm so sick and tired. Either, look, this is what Joe Biden and the Democrats want to happen. And they say, no, they don't want the deaths. They don't want the drugs. Okay, then they could stop it. I'm not saying they want people to die, but what I am saying is either you're evil or you're just dumb. That's the bottom line. Because the previous administration stopped all this. You came into office, Joe Biden, and bragged about doing everything the opposite. You mocked the previous administration's policies. You talked about the 93 executive orders you got rid of. Look at us. And the media comes in and says, yes, look how strong Joe Biden is getting rid of those inhumane policies. And now what do we have? Everything fell apart. And so it was no crisis for the first year. It was no crisis for the second year. It was no crisis for the third year. Now it's a crisis, say the Democrats. Oh, yeah, and it's Republicans' fault. It has been a disaster from day one. 3 million people coming into this country illegally in a single year. There are now, what, more illegal aliens in this country, more encounters on that border, what, 11 million, 10, 11 million if you count gotaways, more than like 35 states' populations? Like, what is happening here? It's what insane.
It is insane. And you're right, but they're trying to, they can't, they all have to protect each other. Again, this is like the more of the Washington establishment, but really it's the Biden White House and the media, and they're all protecting each other because you're, I mean, Hogan is fired up, but you're every word of what you said just said is true. They spent 3 years denying it, and now when everything has come unraveling and it's clear that everything is at Joe Biden's feet because he did all this stuff on purpose, the poorest border is by design. The AP, in a follow-up story about Lake and Riley's death, they wrote a story examining the fears of, this is what they said, quote, fears of solo female athletes.
So stupid.
Right? Unreal.
Because the victim, because so Luke and Riley, Lake and Riley was out running by herself on the campus at the University of Georgia. And the implication is that it was her decision to go running that cost her life, not the fact that she got attacked and murdered. You know, I mean, isn't that, Sonny, let me ask you this as a woman, isn't that really close to blaming a rape victim for based on what clothes she was wearing? Isn't that kind of the same thing?
Yes, and I'm pretty sure that same story described the person who killed her as a Georgia resident.
Athens resident.
Yeah, failed to mention that this is a criminal with a long criminal record who entered our country illegally with the intent to commit crimes. And yes, Tim, to that point, I was thinking when I was in college, I would go run our trails all the time by myself and not think twice about it. You know, I mean, I went to college in a pretty small town and I just never even imagined that happening. And after Lake and Riley was killed, it really has been just spurring in my mind. Am I safe going out to the grocery store? Am I safe taking my child out for a walk around the park? Because we don't know. Every state is a border state now. I know everyone uses that talking point, but it's true. This is what Hogan was saying. Millions and millions of people that are here spread all across our country, not giving, these people are not the best people in the world to be coming here. These countries aren't sending.
We don't know. We don't know who they are. That's the thing. We don't know who they are.
I mean, the hundreds on the terrorist watch list, the hundreds from communist China. I mean,
20,000 Chinese military age men, right?
Yeah. Like, also, you see the stories that were coming out, too, that Joe Biden was going to do an executive order of some kind trying to fix this. The blowback internally had to have been similar to the one they saw outside, which was, wait a minute, I thought you couldn't do anything from the executive branch. Everything he did was from the executive branch, and then he tried to claim it was the legislative solution.
Right.
I mean, it didn't make any sense at all.
No.
You want to change the immigration system, that's fine. You can wait on Congress to do that. But you as the executive have some tools at your disposal, not to mention the fact there are laws on the books that you are not following at all. This angers me to no end when you watch our tax dollars. Now they're giving gift cards, thousands, tens of thousands of dollars to people who are here illegally. Hotel stays, kicking kids, our kids that we pay taxes for them to go to school, kicking them out of school and putting migrants there and housing them there. It is so insane. There is a reason that we have been talking about this for years in the Trump administration and years after it. And the left has tried to ignore it. As I said, they just want the votes. That's what this is all about for them. But now it's coming home because the American people realize what's happening. And the brilliant stroke, which is what we tried to do in the White House, myself, Sarah Sanders, a couple of others, while we were on the campaign trail for Mike Huckabee back in 2016, we're saying we ought to send these folks up to, at the time we used Burlington, Vermont, where Bernie's from, or Chappaqua, where Hillary lives. We should send them there. In the White House, we tried to do that. People, for various reasons, I would say in the deep state, said, no, no, you can't do that. Can't do that. We're not doing that. We're like, we should do that. No, we're not. Thankfully, these governors said, all right, here's the deal. You're a sanctuary city. You stand up there and virtue signal and clutch your pearls and say, we want everyone here. Everyone deserves a chance in this country because we know they're coming here for all real reasons. They're not lying about it. They can come to this town. They can come to this city anytime they want, and we'll take care of them. That lasted for, I don't know, 5-10 minutes. And once everyone got there, they're like, hey, look, this is really difficult for us because we got like 1,000 folks show up. 1,000 folks? There are millions coming across that border, and they couldn't handle the littlest, smallest spike in population in these cities, in these towns, for obvious reasons. They shouldn't have to, but the border states shouldn't have to either. This is a huge problem that the next administration, if it's not Joe Biden, is going to have to do incredible things to fix it. It's going to be very difficult to fix.
It is going to be difficult to fix, especially because, you know, if it's Biden working through this leading between, let's say, between now and the election, Biden purposely undid all these 93 or 94 Trump actions, purposely undid them. And now he's first, then he blamed, oh, I need the tools from the legislature. And now he's toying, publicly thinking about the idea, like you just said, of some sort of executive action, which he previously claimed he could not do.
Couldn't do. Yep.
But now when he's doing, when he offers the idea, when he floats the idea that he might do some sort of executive action, you know that the left has freaked out again and they got in his ear again saying, no, you can't do that. We liked all the stuff that you did. Keep the border open. You know, so he's in this tug of war between the security of the country and what the rabid left wants, because they want open borders. And so far, if it's an argument over policy in the Biden White House, so far the left has won because the borders are open. And that's why you got everybody trying to defend him in the media and cover up for this. You know, the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, which is pretty close to this murder case on the campus of the University of Georgia, you know, it's the largest newspaper in the state of Georgia. They referred to the suspect who is in custody, who's an illegal alien from Venezuela, referred to him as an Athens man, much like the Associated Press did. But here's the biggest newspaper in Georgia calling, said, which is misleading because it implies that Athens is where he's from, where is his hometown, when of course he's not. And then they also ran the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, the AJC, they ran a story about how in the illegal alien community in Georgia, they're worrying about backlash now. It's like the Norm Macdonald joke come to life, where you know, if Al Qaeda ever sets off a nuclear device and kills 50 million people, I just worry about the backlash against peaceful Muslims, right? That's what Norm Macdonald. Yeah. So, and right. The AJC quoted one of these illegal aliens as saying that if people get mad at the illegal alien community at large, that's, quote, not fair. Well, how fair was it to Lake and Riley to get murdered?
Right.
How fair was that?
Yeah.
How fair is it to the taxpayers that you're taking our money, not for our citizens, but for you? You don't pay taxes here, right?
Right. So here you go.
Anyway, go ahead.
I know you get all riled up. So,
like Tim with the laptop story.
The what?
I said, this
me
is
too.
Like,
oh, yeah, right, sure.
Of, just like both of us,
just like the laptop gets me all fired up. But the AJC also invented, new to me anyway, invented a new euphemism for illegal alien. Are you ready for
this? I saw
this. They're talking about the group of nervous people here, the illegal aliens who are nervous that everybody's going to get mad at illegal aliens because there was a murder. The AJC refers to them as Georgia-based Venezuelans. Yes, Georgia-based Venezuelans. They're Venezuelans, but they're Georgia-based now.
Georgia-based, like it's like an assignment from work.
I don't know. Gosh.
Yeah, it went from illegal alien to like illegal immigrant, then
right.
Undocumented, which is the dumbest thing ever. If I walk out the door right now and forget my driver's license, I'm undocumented. Yeah, but that doesn't mean I'm not a citizen. Now we're talking Georgia-based Venezuelans. They ought to just cut to the chase and call them voters. That's what they ought to do. Future Democrat voters. Just call them Democrat voters. Yeah.
I mean, this is the subject of my Washington Times column that's out today. Is this whole thing about how the media is trying to smooth off the pointy edges of this political issue for Biden by just running interference every which way, including when they're talking about the people who are illegally in this country, calling them Georgia-based Venezuelans. I mean, my God.
I don't understand what the media gains from this by covering for the illegal immigrants that are these heinous crimes.
Listen, think about...
It's just the policy.
Well, think about the approach, the intellectual approach that has to go into accepting a term like that, right? Georgia-based Venezuelans. That means that you acknowledge that these people are foreign nationals, but they are foreign nationals here within our own country, and they get to have their own little community. Georgia-based Venezuelans. We are accepting the fact that there are essentially elements of foreign countries organized and living within our own country. What other nation on earth would permit such a thing?
No one. No one.
No one. Venezuela wouldn't allow something like this.
No,
all right. Would we have Caracas-based Americans? Would we have that ever?
Nope.
I don't know, guys, but it makes me very on edge with knowing the amount of illegal immigrants that have come in to our country, how they have spread across the whole United States, how long until it affects someone in my family or in your family? What is it going to take for policies to be changed? I mean,
thing. Now, Democrats in a lot of these cities are allowing people who are not citizens of America to vote in American elections.
Yeah.
I don't know why. Like, I don't know if I would want, maybe it's too ironic by half, Tim, because you're kind of the expert on this type of sarcasm, but I'm afraid it may work. Like, I would love a Republican attorney to file a lawsuit on behalf of the People's Republic of Iran and be like, why are we not mailing ballots to Iranians to vote for American elections? We're letting people from Venezuela, letting people from Guatemala, from Mexico, from other places vote in American elections. Why not just let people from France, Iraq, Iran, whatever. Let's let them all vote here. Like, it's insane.
Yeah,
who thinks this is okay other than some radical left? And if you're that power hungry, where you've got to systematically, fundamentally change the entire makeup of a country just so you can have an extra vote in the House or the Senate or a better angle on the presidency, I mean, it's just, it's disgusting. But more than that, it's just dangerous. It's just dangerous.
Yes.
All right. I mean,
we're coming up on 40 minutes. We could, you know, we mentioned the other thing that's in the news really is Hunter testifying on the Hill, which is
I wore this just for the podcast.
What's it say? Oh, 10% for the big guy. Yeah.
10% for the big guy.
I love that, Hogan.
10% for the big guy shirt on right now. Yep.
Where'd you get that?
I got it. I'm a sucker for the Instagram.
Me too.
It shows up. Yeah. And I was like, I'm buying this for sure. I got like three of them. I was so excited.
So he goes in there, and of course he denies everything. My, I never included my father in my business thing. And then Dan Goldman, who is now the new Adam Schiff, right? Dan Goldman, he's the heir to the Levi Strauss fortune, right? You guys know this guy.
I don't know.
He was a lawyer or a staff lawyer, or they brought him in from the outside or something, but he helped with one of the Trump impeachments. He was a Democrat staff attorney during one of the impeachments. And now we are lucky enough to have him as a member of Congress. And he is the designated Democrat attacker who goes out there and tries to get the Democrat spin on whatever the testimony is before the news of the actual testimony can get out. And he goes out there and he says, "We now have confirmation that Joe Biden was not involved in his son's confirmation from who, we might ask. Oh, you mean the guy who is accused of the crimes says he didn't do it. Oh, I gotcha. Wow, what groundbreaking testimony. You're telling me that essentially, you know, just paraphrasing this, Hunter Biden has entered a not guilty plea, case closed." Right, basically.
Yeah.
Hunter said he didn't do it. That's good enough for Dan Goldman. Okie doke. Guy's always been trustworthy. Let's just take his word for it.
You know, again, you and I both get so fired up about this story too.
Yeah.
It's like, my dad was not involved in this at all. Okay. Did you call him when you're at business meetings? Sure. Did you put it on a speakerphone? Sure. Oh, did you send a WhatsApp message to the people in China? Sure. Did you send text messages? Did you say 10% for the big guy? Sure. I did all those things. He wasn't involved at all. And again, the idea with the media and the left and the Democrats, what they want you to believe is that Joe Biden is the most caring, compassionate, involved father ever to have walked the earth. Also, he knew nothing at all about what his son was doing for a business. None.
Never.
So he was only involved in the personal life, which, if that's the case, he didn't do a good job with that, obviously, because of the drugs and everything else. But the other interesting
I'm not going to blame him for that.
No, I'm not blaming Joe Biden for that. No, but here's where I was going with the drug piece. This is what was interesting. He said in the testimony now that Hunter said, "Well, I think I was high or drunk when I sent that WhatsApp message."
Right.
Okay. I don't think that's the issue. That's like me saying I was high or drunk when I ran my car through the school. I was high or drunk when I shot that person. That's not the question. Did you do it or did you not do it?
Right.
And is that illegal? Does that break any law? That's what I can't wrap my head around.
It might be an explanation for how he did those things and the certain words that he said and all that stuff, but it's not an excuse.
It's not an excuse.
Right. And, you know, what also is funny, it's a couple times I've said this before, is that we're expected to believe that, and what we know about Joe Biden, his personality, he always wants what's his. He wants credit. He wants everyone to know that he was at the center of everything. We're expected to believe that everybody around Joe Biden is getting rich off of his influence and his power, and he's not going to get a piece of it.
And he doesn't want a dime.
He doesn't get a taste of it. Not a chance. There's not a chance that he's letting everybody live off of him all this time and he doesn't get a chunk of it. And the other thing is, when they have these, you know, actual direct payments from people like his brother James and from Hunter to Joe, when there are payments from other people to Joe Biden, the White House's explanation was, that's repayment of a loan. Joe had lent them money. Now, everyone around him they're the ones with their arms out. They're the ones who are scooping up millions of dollars in cash from all these foreign sources. But somehow Joe is the one lending money to everybody. Everybody else is getting rich, but he lent Hunter money for a car payment. Hunter was getting $1 million a year from Burisma for doing nothing, which is also really funny. When the stuff about Burisma came out and that one FBI informant who was accused of lying now, that one guy, which doesn't affect all this other stuff that was from
nothing
on the laptop. The guy says that, they paid, there were some details of that where I guess he alleged that there had been some meetings with Hunter in Ukraine. And Hunter's lawyer's defense to that was, Hunter's never been to Ukraine. Not realizing that makes the Burisma payments to him look even stupider, that he never even went there, but they're still paying him $1 million.
Yeah.
You're proud of the fact that he never went there? Well, what on God's green earth were they possibly paying him for then? I wonder.
I don't have much to say about Hunter Biden other than you did a great job explaining this in layman's terms, in a previous podcast that we had, when we were talking about the whole, oh, Joe Biden didn't benefit from any of this, this is his son's business deals, all his money. You said, Sonny, would it benefit you if Isaiah, my son, ended up getting just millions of dollars randomly?
Yeah. And I was like, of course. Jonathan Turley was the one. There's actually sure
lots, yeah, it's Jonathan Turley. Yeah.
Lots of precedent to the yeah, yeah there's lots of precedent.
He's the original name, image, and likeness beneficiary.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yes, I just thought about that. I was like, you know, college yeah. kids get that money. I was like, no, that's Hunter and Joe. They're like the original yeah. on that.
That's a good one.
Excellent way to look at it. All right. Well, that's a lot of ground covered. Hey, so far so good. I guess it worked out. Did you guys like this? I guess it didn't really have a difference, make a difference, whether it's live
F or it, do, F thing. It, do it live. That's what a, great man once we're gonna, what a great man once said.
We're going to do it live. Yes, yeah. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was cool. All right, well, Hogan Gidley, Sonny Joy Nelson, thanks you guys. I'm Tim Murtaugh. This has been a good one, as always, because this has been the Live Line Drive Podcast.